You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
It's the 28th day of the month, December 2016, and it's the second from last broadcast in the year 2016. We're listening to a little Handsome Boy Modeling School. So what do we got going on tonight? You guys are listening to Quite Frankly. Watching, quite frankly, and interacting with, quite frankly. The Skype is on. We're going to be just doing our thing, have a few things to talk about. The first thing I want to get onto is this. Oh, number one, if Pierre is watching, I just resent his letter. I messed up how many stamps I had to put on from New York to France, and apparently I have to put 3 stamps. I only put 1, you know. Takes more than that. But the first thing I wanted to bring up was this Market Watch article I got here. When death meets faith, Facebook, social networkers upstage the deceased. That's all it is, upstaging. That's all it is. It's all it's ever been. It's all it's ever been when you start, you know, mourning publicly. But listen to this. In 2016, death and Facebook appear to go hand in hand as death of actress Carrie Fisher at age 60 and singer George Michael at age 53, among the seemingly high rate of other deaths of beloved public figures in 2016, people have shared their memories and thoughts about a person on social media, and some not so successfully. Now, what they link to there, and we'll get back to this article, what they link to there is a tweet by Steve Martin. Okay, the always agreeable Steve Martin. Who the hell has Steve Martin, one of the 3 amigos, ever offended? What the hell has he ever done wrong? I don't even know where he's ever been caught up. But you don't want to know what he did wrong? Let's go to the link to this article. NYMag.com. Carrie Fisher struggled against being a nerd boy sex object her whole life. Nerd boy. A nerd boy. Okay, if it's not worse, it's not worse enough to just be a sex object, you're going to be a sex object for the most inept, limp type of boys out there, the nerd boys that nobody are afraid of. It's like, I don't know what the hell they even think, what even say about that headline, nerd boy sex object. Have you seen what has been done to the people, the cast of episode 7? Have you seen what the internet has done to Finn and Poe? Have you seen what the internet has done to Donnie Yen and that other character, Baze? Holy shit. They paint them with these rosy cheeks, and they're just glowing with homosexuality. They're literally glowing, like they have a halo around them, and they're just looking at each other lovingly, and they're doing dishes together, and they're cuddling up. And I mean, to nerd boy sex object, what the fuck are you talking about? In either case, we'll get around to this because it's all there's so much hypocrisy here, and there's hypocrisy all throughout the news. But listen to this. I wish I had known I was a sex symbol, Carrie Fisher said during an excellent press tour for Star Wars The Force Awakens, in which she returned alongside Harrison Ford to play Leia Organa. That's so odd, because I don't look at myself even remotely in that way. Well, that's the thing. There are a lot of people out there that aren't exactly conventionally attractive, that have a lot of fans in a sexual sense, because of the way they carry themselves on screen, because of the characters that we've been exposed to, because for many of us, and especially before we were so oversaturated with social media, we only knew people by the characters that they were playing on screen. We didn't know them by all the fucking farts they had throughout the day, all the shits they took, the places they ate for lunch. I mean, the places they ate at for lunch, the things that they... I mean, seriously. We know everything about everybody. There is no mystique left to anybody in Hollywood, in the sports world, nothing. Most people have pictures out there of jizz sprayed all over their backside. Okay? Seriously. The amount of exposure here. So for even back in the 70s, in the 80s, where you just had to go buy a couple of magazines out there to learn about what your favorite Hollywood starlet was doing during their time off in between movies and stuff like this, vacationing and shit like that, wherever the paparazzi happened to have stumbled upon them. That's all you had. That's all you had. Of course, in the back to the article, of course, sex symbol is a one-dimensional reading. Hold on a second. Of course, sex symbol is a one-dimensional... Where the fuck is this article now? One-dimensional reading of her character, who was a... Okay, and here comes the cocksucking. Who was a brilliant tactician, a strong rebel leader, and an ace shot with a blaster. And yet, the launch of George Lucas's Star Wars trilogy in 1977, especially thanks to her infamous metal and leather bikini in 1983's Return of the Jedi, that's exactly what Fisher became, on an international scale, a sex object. Yeah, because there's nothing, because obviously, what should actually be sexy about a strong, confident person that can handle themselves in a pinch and always has something witty to say back to somebody who's trying to mess with them in some kind of a way? What could possibly be sexy about that, aside from the fact that we caught a glimpse of them in a bikini and it wasn't that bad at all? Holy shit. It's like they have to detach... They have to detach from reason to be able to write these articles. Detach from reason and sensibility and the truth about what we are as people, as human beings. But then again, these are people who belong to cult movements that are trying to erase humanity from humanity. They believe that it's possible. And of course, along the way, they make all these ridiculous, brilliantly hypocritical statements. Because they are, in fact, human as well, but they deny it. They think that they are perfect specimens, or striving to be perfect, at least. But, they, of course, they fail at that as well. Princess Leia's status as a catalyst of male sexual awakening has been alluded to countless times in pop culture. On Friends, when Ross confesses to Rachel that he had a sexual fantasy about bikini-clad Leia, Phoebe assures her it's a rite of passage. Every guy our age loved that, she said. It's huge. That's the moment when she stopped being a princess and she became like a woman. As a Washington Post Alyssa Rosenberg points out, one of the most glaring signs that Leia is seen as sexy rather than complex is the Philadelphia dad who complained about the scantily clad Leia action figure. And on Tuesday, Steve Martin helpfully reminded us of this fact in a now deleted tweet when he said that for him as a young man, she was the most beautiful creature I had ever seen. She's writing this in disdain of that comment that Steve Martin in 1977, who was already in his early 30s or something like that, which is how old Harrison Ford was when he was actually banging Carrie Fisher. So I don't get it. I don't get what we're talking about here. And to think that there is, and to look at this, and to think that there is actually an argument here to say that this was a sign that Leia was only seen as sexy rather than a complex character is an absolute absurdity. Absurdity. First of all, in Return of the Jedi, she was enslaved. She was enslaved by Jabba the Hutt. She killed Jabba the Hutt with her bare hands and the chain on which she was enslaved by. That's number one. Number two, she was only enslaved in the first place, not because she was stolen out of her bed one night in a helpless manner, because she was leading a fucking rescue mission to get Han Solo back. She was leading the fucking rescue mission. Number three, then she goes to help plan the entire assault at Endor, and she leads the assault on the ground. She's going out and she's zipping through the forests of Endor in a speeder bike. She's taking out stormtroopers. She's just laying waste to people. Oh my God, we got a glimpse of her sexual in a sexual sense, in a physical sense. Oh my God, we were reminded that not only is she a badass, but she's also beautiful and desirable, which is probably why Han Solo liked her too. You fucking numbskulls. But look at this Steve Martin tweet that had to be deleted because he was just attacked so viciously by these freaks. Look at this tweet. When I was a young man, Carrie Fisher, she was the most beautiful creature I had ever seen. She turned out to be witty and bright as well. But of course, the mistake was saying that that she was witty and bright as well. It wasn't that she was the most beautiful creature you'd ever seen as well, but because we live in bizarro land, where we tend to forget that when we, the observer, the people who watch the films, sit back and look at somebody on screen for the first time, we're not meeting Carrie Fisher. We've met Leia Organa, draped in a loosely fitting but hip-hugging type of a white toga type of a robish type of garb. And then we have all this other... We don't know Carrie Fisher. Steve Martin didn't know Carrie Fisher the person when A New Hope came out. And over the next couple of years, you only started learning about her when she started getting picked up and she started doing the interviews. You learn about them afterwards. Why do you think it's called Love at First Sight, even though this is a little bit more of a lusty thing? Which, again, what the hell is wrong with that? This is how we procreate. Men and women, they kind of fall for each other. There's something there. There's something there in the in just the code. So Steve Martin, one of the most agreeable guys in the world, got nailed to a cross because of these fucking crazy asses. And what does that bring? And what does this bring up in me when I see these feminist, these feminist, just ninnies, come out of the woodwork to try to jump all over this and put their two cents in and beat back the men who thought that she was pretty in life. Beat them back. Beat them all back. They remind me of the Emperor Penguins in Batman Returns that came out at the end to usher Danny DeVito into his icy, cold, watery grave. Now, obviously, Carrie Fisher is not a villain, but I'm just thinking of the Penguins now. I'm thinking of all the people at Salon. I'm thinking about the people at nymag.com. I'm thinking about all the armies of idiots that are looking for reblogs and likes and trying to virtue signal on the internet. I'm thinking about them, okay? The Emperor Penguins. A bunch of embarrassingly overprotective media pallbearers is what we have here. Embarrassingly overprotective, hypocritical media pallbearers. Talking about people, shaming people who have something genuinely nice to say about an actress, a person like Carrie Fisher, to be able to say so succinctly, like Steve Martin did, that he was able to appreciate the beauty of Carrie Fisher on the inside and the outside. For him to be shamed to the point where he has to delete the tweet and run away with his tail tucked between his legs is embarrassing. Embarrassing. And fuck you all. It's like these creeds. Like, oh, sweet sleep, my princess. We'll protect you now. We'll protect you now. And hopefully this article will get some sweet shares, too. Maybe they'll share around our articles so they can see how much of a protector we are of you. My God. And what about Robert Redford? What about Warren Beatty? Huh? What about Robert Redford and Warren Beatty? Were they just fine actors? Fine actors? Did multiple generations of women not diddle themselves to the thought of writing their faces? Or were they just fine actors who happened to be a little cute, but I don't look at them that way? Is that where we're going to now? That girls didn't go bonkers for Joey Lawrence in the 90s? Is that where we're going? So are we back to assuming that women aren't as sexually charged as men again? Is that where I thought that this was a thought that has been laughed at by the liberated women of the country and the world for decades now. That women aren't as sexually charged, that women are as sexually charged as men. They have all the same thoughts, they have all the same desires, and they shouldn't be shunned for it. I thought that was the credo of all of the sexually liberated women of the past couple of decades. What happened to the fucking them? So are we supposed to forget all that now and go back to showing reverence for the gentler sex again? Is that what we're supposed to be doing? Or are we equal? What is it? Are we equal? Or are you guys the gentler sex that needs to be looked at only as the inner beauty and not as the outer? I don't get it. Well, what is this? So go ahead and cast your lot. Cast your lot. Tell us where you stand, you fucking nincompoops. Oh. Had to get that out of me. Had to get that out of me. Talk about perversion. Perversion is the virtue signaling that's going on. Virtue signaling. People are so obsessed with being just the best person ever that they can't even. There's something inside of them where they cannot sit back and be at peace with a way that somebody else eulogizes somebody. I mean, it's like theirs is the only acceptable eulogy. Theirs is the only acceptable tribute. And they must be the arbiter of all acceptable thought on a person's life. On a person's life. It's fucking unbelievable. Oh, God. It worked. Mike just got. Mike just set up my new phone. The old password. Oh, so it's gonna download my backup now. And then I want to turn the cloud off. I don't like that fucking cloud. As soon as the backup is downloaded, I want to turn all the cloud off. I can't. I mean, I. There's no dick pictures on the phone anymore. But. It's been a while since that happened, but there's something about the cloud. I don't know why anybody backs up to the cloud. Too crazy. Johnny Charles says, the second Rogue One came out, J.J. Abrams realized that he could pay some Indian code writer $15,000 instead of keeping up Carrie Fisher's $2 million cocaine habit. She was fucking gone, son. Well, I don't know. She's still doing drugs. We know that she was doing a lot of it at one point. I was just talking to my mother about it yesterday because I was watching. I watched her stand up at one point. I forgot what the hell it was called. My mother brought it up again last night. I only watched it when I was with my mom. It was funny. She was fantastic. She was a great personality, Carrie Fisher. And she could handle herself. Now she's like, well, she's gone, so we've got to handle it for her. Gotta handle it for her. Oh, don't worry, Nikki. If times get rough soon, there's gonna be maybe I'll add monthly dick pics to a new level on Patreon. That'll be the 2016. Mike just said I'll definitely sign up for that. The 2006, that's the $20.16 Patreon plan. You get a monthly dick pic. But I do something very special to the dick. So it's like it's different every time. It has a theme. I put sideburns on it and stuff like that. Oh, whatever. Nobody cares. Who the hell cares? What's that, Mike?
So that piece of paper and pen in front of you, write it down for me, the code, because it didn't work.
The code?
Yeah.
The one I just put in?
Yeah, the 4 of your old phone, Frank's iPhone.
It worked now? All right, well, Mike's figuring that out. Oh, my God. Hey, Paul, what's going on, Paul? Our good buddy Paul Quinones is with us. Paul, you got to come in and see the new studio, my man. Everybody, Paul Programs in the chat room has been with us. First of all, he's one of my buddies from college, and he was there for the very first broadcast that Zarazza New York ever did. Okay, very first broadcast I was ever a part of. It was on February 18th, 2006, at Manhattanville College, WFML, WMVL. 88.1 WFML. That'd be great if we call this W Fuck My Life. So, Paul is a vet. Talk to Paul. It's been a very long time since I've seen him. And Paul, I hope everything is well with you and your family, and Merry Christmas. All right. So, guys, the Skype is on. Call in. Let us know what you think about anything that we're talking about here. Jenny Lee said I can put my dick into like a little karate outfit. That'll be good. Call in and see if is there anything that you want to say about what we covered with Carrie Fisher. If not, we have things to move on for. Here's one that I want to move on to that I thought was fantastic. Now, there's nothing in this article that I need to read beyond the basics. This is from Fox News. It passed by me on Tumblr today. You cannot eat here. A cafe in Hawaii, says it riles up residents by saying if you voted for Trump, you cannot eat here. No Nazis allowed, pretty much. Now, I love this. Now, I voted for Trump because I felt I had no choice. And I hate how much I've actually had to come to his defense. Because very early on in the election, all of my candidates, the people who were speaking to limited government, the Constitution, and true notions of freedom, were gone from the race. But what I will say is, I love this, and I completely support this restaurant's management decision to refuse service to political opponents or anybody else that doesn't align with their points of view. I would rather not patronize a place like this one that is acting so petty. And that's why I approve of it. And life goes on and no one gets hurt. I want liberals to take a look at this. And I want everybody else out there to remember this. Remember this. That liberals are starting to understand, whether they know it or not, they're starting to get the importance of freedom of association. And of course, in the times to come, they won't want to hear about it, and they won't want to remember things like this when they're back on the move to destroy local bakeries and that prefer to abstain from baking cakes for gay weddings, or when shop owners in New York City are fined $250,000 or threatened with a fine of $250,000 for not accepting somebody's preferred pronouns. Okay? But as long as everyone takes note of this, then the hypocrisy that is soon to come, because there are no principled people on the left, none, none that we could find, or none that get the proper amount of media attention. The only people that get media attention these days are the fringe nut jobs on the left. And of course, they have built a house on sand. Nothing. No principles whatsoever. So remember this and take note of this, because the hypocrisy that is sure to come will only be that much more glaring to you. So 100%, I approve of this Hawaiian Cafe's choice to not serve Trump supporters. Okay? As if you're able to tell who was a Trump supporter by their exterior, just as if you were able to tell. I mean, that's it. You know? So that's the number one, because it is a perfect reason. Would I ever go and eat in this cafe that does not want me, who wasn't enthusiastic about Donald Trump, but felt compelled to pull the lever for Donald Trump? Do I want to go into that cafe? No. I am 100% okay with respecting the wishes of the person. I'm actually thankful that they said such a thing, because I would, A, hate to give my money to a person who doesn't like me for something as petty as that. And I mean, it's just great. It's great. I would hate for them to be forced to accept my money. A, I wouldn't do it willingly. And B, why would I want anybody? Why would I want them forced to take my money? It's still a benefit to them. Fuck them. Number one, fuck them. Number two, fuck them. Number three, fuck them. So, I mean, this is as easy as it goes, guys. No one gets hurt. Life goes on. And people are able to put a very big sign on their head that says asshole or bigot or just, you know, religious in my own way. Because I know a couple of people who have no hate in their heart, but just feel a certain way about things like gay marriage and other type of socially normalized things that are prevalent in society that don't really bother anybody, but just they have religious hang-ups. That's it. No hate. There are hateful people there. There are discriminatory people there. There are bullies like that out there. Absolutely. Either way, let yourself be known so we know where not to go. Don't get a government to force them to service people they don't like. Why would you want to be serviced by them? But that's not the point. That's not the point. At that point, you're not looking for the cake that refused you to bake you the cake. You're looking for the heavy hand of government to go out and do your bidding to destroy another person's livelihood and their lives and their reputation. Even though, by putting themselves out there, they're already telling people what should be counted into the overall perception of their reputation. And in a free market, your reputation is what builds your business. So it is up to everybody to be very, very smart about who they're trying to target and how much they're willing to give up to be who they are and to act on their beliefs. Beliefs. That's it. That's the beauty of the free market. You don't need a heavy-handed hand of government to come around and clobber people. So good for you, Hawaiian asshole, with your stupid pizza. The fuck puts ham and pineapple on a pizza, you fucking creeps. Okay, let's move on to something else. We got a couple of highlights. You know, I gotta say, and you know what? Let me say my thank yous first. So for everybody who knows this show and enjoys this show day in, day out, whether you watch live or you listen to it on the podcast, and let me tell you something, I think the podcasts are cozy as hell. So I really go on iTunes or SoundCloud and subscribe, give it a couple of stars, give it a review. I love reading your reviews on air. And also, if you like where this is going and you want to see it go to bigger places, then please become a patron on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/quitefrankly, and I have a couple of things there, perks and rewards there for you that all make sense. All make sense. I believe wholeheartedly that you're getting more than what you're paying for, and that's the only reason why I put it up there, because I would be embarrassed to do it otherwise. In fact, many of you guys, and Rumble, where the hell's Rumble and Roar been? Buddy, for what you have done in supporting this beautiful, beautiful nightly show. Okay? And I want to thank everybody very personally. This is part of the perks, getting a shout out every night. So starting with Michael Wells, Nikki Solis, Andrew Dame, Laura Veris. Let's get this music up a little bit. It's a little bit more Johann Strauss. Let's just waltz our way through this. Ready? Here we go. Andrew Great Dame, Laura Veris, Perry and Stacy Little, the hottest couple from fucking Connecticut. Mike May, who was very, very upset that Carrie Fisher, he's, I don't know what to do, man. I said, what are you going to do? This is part of life. We are going to die. You're upset that somebody got there before you did? Strap in. You got a lot of loss coming your way. I mean, Jesus Christ. Matt Smith, Sean Collins, Christian Peppers, Max Incaparato from Colorado, and Rob Corrado. Rob Corrado gave me Dark Knight Returns. It's the Frank Miller comic book. He's been telling me about it for a long time. But he actually gave it to me for Christmas, and I started reading it last night. The first graphic novel I ever really sat down and read as an adult, and I'm really, really having fun with this. This is going to be great. LS Dan Spratlin, he got my precious metals reserve kicked off with that ounce of silver that he sent me for Christmas. Thank you so much, Dan. Rudy Escarcega, Jackie Milam, Eric Reitz, Whitney. I love Whitney. Gotta have Whitney on. Whitney's actually a member of the LGB community, and I can't wait to have her on when there's a subject we can have her on with. She always wanted to come on and talk, and we talk about it all the time. We're trying to look for a good topic to break the ice. She should just call in. Either way, what do you think about Carrie Fisher, Whitney? Call in. Or message it, and I'll just read it the next time around. Love you, girlfriend. Pierre, who I need to resend the letter to because I didn't have the right postage. And Tony Federici. I love you, Tony. Mr. Hoss. Hoss, what's some of the other ones? Hoss. Jeff Hostetler. Okay. Koss. Thank you, Koss. Stephanie Evil from Gaslight.tv. Bren Antilles, leader of Rogue Squadron from the UK. Marianne Hart, who is out there saving the cheetahs now that they are vulnerable and almost endangered. Brian O'Connor, who is a stalwart supporter and producer of the show. Kate McCallum. Jenny Lee, who is mixing it up in the chat room tonight. My God, she is just like a digital internet boner, just constantly. Got all the boys standing at attention. Matt DeFabio and Brad Meyer. Matt doesn't come to the show anymore, obviously. All right. And then Stephanie K. Stephanie K. Beauty. Stephanie sent me an amazing Christmas package I have not opened up yet, but I got so many of your letters already that came in the mail last night. I can't wait to go home tonight and rip them open. I didn't have time last night. So that being said, thank you, everybody. And I hope that so many more of you, whoever you are, come on and become patrons in the future. That is what I would love. Oh, my God. We just got a new patron. And it's Ryan. I want to thank Ryan V. Ryan V. This is your first shout out, my man. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. Thank you for being a part of it. We are going to have so much fucking fun in 2017. Nothing's going to stop us. I'm telling you that. Nothing's going to stop us. Nothing can put out this insatiable, this fire inside my belly. It can't happen. So, moving on. Got a couple of things that I wanted to put out as highlights, but I realized there's something you have to realize about YouTube. Social media is what I'm starting to think here is social media. I have a little bit of a problem with what's going on. I think that it's becoming less social. And let me know if you what you think about this. And this is based on some stuff that I know about what's going on in YouTube and Facebook and what the algorithms are rewarding and how people are being rewarded for growing their channel. Now, if we were to go back any number of years, even 2 years, 1 year ago, and we were to be streaming every night like we do on YouTube, like we should have done as soon as YouTube beta streaming came out, we should have jumped over to YouTube and started. If it was any other time at YouTube, a live streamed hour every night on this channel would have netted us thousands of subscribers just because of the consistency, because of the consistency, the length of time, and because of the interaction, and because of all the, you know, the back end work, the tags and the types of things that we talk about. Thousands of subscribers. Now, we're still picking up a couple of dozen subscribers a month. That's cool. But if you look at what's going on with YouTube, YouTube and other platforms are rewarding people based on algorithm and how much they're able to keep up. They're rewarding clickbait titles. They're rewarding really good thumbnails, which we've got down. We've got down. We have catchy titles and thumbnails that we've been doing a lot lately. But it's the output. It's the output. You need to be putting out multiple videos a day. Highlights. Shit that I don't have the time for. Shit that only people like Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, all the late night shows, all the people who have bullpens. Bullpens full of video editors that are working around the clock to appease and appeal to the algorithm that's currently in place. That is it. And why I think that is becoming less social is because here we have the well-funded dinosaur media types that are able to pull off these workloads that actually reward the views on YouTube. Now, of course, there are people out there that find viral success for very small things and just, you know, being consistent with what they're doing, and we're not going to stop in any means. But just to think that there was a time that we would have already had the doors cracked wide open for the type of consistency that we're putting out every night. And that shifting away from really putting the onus of viewership and the rewards of viewership onto the little people who are using the platform, the little people that really make up what society is, what being social is all about. Those are the people. Those are the thing. Now it's almost like the main component of social media, which was the people using and creating the content on the go, are really just being morphed into those who are able to transport the content from those who have the money and have the staff to pop out what is really being awarded by the social media platforms right now in an algorithm sense. That's the thing that kills me. And that's why I think it's becoming a little bit less social. You know, and what this brought up, why this was brought up for me today is because we had a meeting with a potential partner and a sponsor of the show, of the network. And it was a great meeting. In 2017, I think that we're going to bring on some really good support and we're going to be able to expand this in great ways. In fact, we have a technology buy that's about to be put forth soon over the next couple of hours with Mike and everybody else over here with our IT people to upgrade all of our machines here so that we can simulcast between Facebook and YouTube every night, and we don't have to take off Fridays on YouTube, and we can keep that consistency. So we're doing all of that because we have great partners, because we're doing great things behind the scenes, and we're not stopping. But in the midst of this meeting, our new friend Matt, we were sitting around and he's talking about his companies and the companies he works with. The guys, Wait until he's on the show. He's going to be on the show next week. You're going to love him. One of the things that he's involved with is training law enforcement and other type of tactical units in taking down active shooter situations, holdups, any kind of hostage situations. They work with paramilitary, all that stuff. They use less lethal rounds to do it, helicopter drop-ins, helicopter extractions. You've got to hear the stories that this guy has. And the way that he really describes the protocol in approaching even friendly, like he talked about how collateral damage really ensues in all these shootouts. Like, for example, if you're going into an active shooter situation in a school, and let's say one of the school staffers was actually legally carrying a firearm, he talks about how that school staffer, if they do not comply with orders of arriving personnel, they could be shot instantly and put down. So you're talking about hair trigger, knee-jerk situations that people are trained to react right off the bat, and that's it. Do nothing but use your training and react. And you think about why in the streets, when you have people that are that don't comply with orders and they don't, and these interactions with cops happen every day, why things go wrong. It's going to be a very, very interesting conversation. His name is Matt. That's all I'll say for now. He'll be on the show next week. You guys are going to love him. Trust me, you're going to love him. But we were talking about all of his different businesses, and he was saying, you know, I feel like I'm just spinning my wheels in mud with all of the with the Facebook and the Twitter and the YouTube and all the Instagram. I'm spinning my wheels in mud. Sometimes I feel like I can spend at least 6 hours of a day working in social media, and I still don't think like I'm getting anywhere. I said, because you're probably not. I said, namely, more specifically and bluntly, you're probably not. And that's because social media is a non-stop process. Non-stop. This is why the people that are using and excelling and getting all the viewership and making strides in YouTube have staff behind them. Because it is absolutely impossible to do this as a one-man project. Absolutely impossible. So, very, very interesting stuff coming up. And just some thoughts on social media in general. So, 743. We did this. You cannot eat here. We did that. I thought this was fun. ITV.com. Dutch Medical Center investigating suspected IVF sperm mix-up involving 26 women. Okay. So pretty much the fertility treatments, what's it called? In vitro. At least 26 women may have been fertilized by the wrong sperm cells. Now, this is terrible. This is terrible because in vitro is very, very expensive. And, of course, this is not like returning a defective PlayStation 4. Okay, this is a human being that has been grown inside of you. All right? It's the most expensive science project ever that you'll ever invest in. The University Medical Center said that it has launched an investigation after it found a, quote, procedural error took place. Isn't it great how they invent all of the terminology and the vocabulary for all this stuff to say that we fucked up? It was a procedural error. Took place between April 2015 and mid-November 2016. It could mean that one man may end up fathering 26 children to strangers. Although the chance of that happening was small, the possibility, quote, could not be excluded, said the center. Half of the women who received treatment have so far become pregnant or given birth. In a statement, it said, quote, During fertilization, sperm cells from one treatment couple may have ended up with the egg cells of 26 other couples. Therefore, there's a chance that the egg cells have been fertilized by sperm other than that of the intended father. The couples have been informed. It added, the UMC's board regrets that the couples involved had to receive this news and will do everything within its power to give clarity on the issue as soon as possible. We will also refund all of the costs of the in vitro, and we will also dispose of the child. Well, that last part didn't happen. Before I get sued. You know, I love Leslie Gore. Before it was part of the whole Suicide Squad, where everybody thinks that Suicide Squad is where You Don't Own Me came from. I would listen to the Golden Oldies with my mother in the car all the time. And we always talk about these artists, Leslie Gore, and, you know, it didn't matter whether it was Nancy Sinatra or... It was so fun. It was so fun to listen to these songs and have my mom tell me what was going on. And she always said, I love Leslie Gore's You Don't Own Me, because it was like one of the first hits of hers that she wasn't just getting shafted by a guy. You know, because it's my party and I'll cry if I wanna, or everybody's just ruining her party. The guy that she likes is going with another girl and all this shit. And here was the first song that she came out and she wasn't gonna take this shit anymore. You Don't Own Me, bitch. And I'd always ask her, you know, what do the lyrics mean? It was very, very important to me. She'd tell you the same thing. I should have her on a show one night. See if she wants to do that. I want to have my stepfather Skip on the show as well. Oh. So there you go. Hey, here's some good news. Here is some good news. Hold on a second. I'm trying to get this, close this out. Here's from The Telegraph. A new gene therapy treatment wipes out leukemia in a little kid. So new gene therapy cancer treatment wipes out a dying girl's leukemia, which is so good to hear. So good to hear. We need this. We need stuff like this. December 26, 2016, a six-year-old leukemia sufferer who became one of the first in the world to trial a new gene therapy treatment is smiling again after tests revealed her cancer has vanished. Aaron Cross of Chester in Cheshire was gravely ill earlier this year with deadly acute lymphoblastic leukemia. My grandmother had leukemia. It's probably where a lot of my anxieties around hospitals started, to be honest, because I was there for one of her blood transfusions. I remember the night that she found out. I didn't understand why everybody was hugging in the kitchen, and it was just very, very odd for me. And I felt bad. I can't imagine what my grandfather. You think about all this stuff. You think about all the shit in your life, the memories you have as kids, of maybe something that was really, really, you know, devastating, but you didn't understand. All the wakes and the funerals you were at, you didn't understand. And I think back at my grandmother being diagnosed with leukemia. And I never even considered what the diagnosis alone did to my grandfather. I know how he handled her in sickness and in death. I know how he handled her after her stroke. That was some of the most... I'll tell you something. I wrote about this once the first thing I ever published. It was about 60,000-word memoir. You say, oh my God, how old are you that you wrote a memoir? I know, but I wanted to write. And I just started writing. And it wasn't the best thing I ever wrote. It was the first thing I ever wrote. So God knows. But I want to rewrite that one day and turn it into something. And It was a moment I'll never forget, and I have to go back and look at what the song was. My grandmother had already suffered a stroke, and she was home, and she was getting weaker. And I remember she was in the bathroom with my mother, and she was trying to, you know, brush her hair or something like that. At that point, her hair was all matted. My grandmother always had her hair permed and puffed out and always done well. And when she had gotten sick and came home, she didn't have her hair done anymore. And it was kind of like, you know, flattened out and just, you know, I don't know. So my mother would help spiff her up any way that she could. And I remember they were in the bathroom looking for some of her stuff. And my mother had just told my grandmother that something was in an item. Maybe it was a brush or something was in a certain place. And she had already forgotten. Her memory was affected. And my mother was getting frustrated. Because, I mean, it must have been frustrating and scary. Say, Mom, I just told you. It's over here. And my grandmother, in her frustration, she yelled at her. And she said, I'm trying, Marianne. And I didn't understand that either. And now it's just so sad to think about. But in the weeks leading up to her death, when she was in the hospital, we would go visit her in the hospital, and some days she was feeling good, and we went to go into the common room where they had, you know, toys and blocks and magazines for all the kids that are visiting their family or friends that are living there. And there was an upright piano in the corner of the room, and she went and she sat down, and I don't know what she played, but a couple of weeks before her death, where she had trouble remembering almost anything, but she knew who we were, thank God. It was a lot of short-term memory stuff that was affected and whatnot. But she sat down at the piano and she played something. I never even knew she knew how to play the piano, but she played something, and I have it all written down. I have to go see what it was, because I want to add the song to my playlist every night if I can. And it was one of the more surreal moments of my life, even back in 1997, late 1996, where I didn't know, I was in sixth grade and it was just happening before my eyes. Just to see all of that, you know, to see that come out of her in her disabled state was very, very inspiring to me. And I'm glad that that's one of the last memories I have of her, because other than that, it was pretty rough. But Aaron Cross of Chester in Cheshire, she had this gene therapy. Let's go back to the article. After 100,000 pounds was raised in a public appeal on ITV's This Morning's Show with Philip Schofield and Holly Willow, whatever. In July, she jetted to Seattle with her doting parents, Sarah and Anthony Cross. An experimental, pioneering new AR, antigen receptor T-cell therapy, re-engineers the cells in the lab to attack and kill cancer cells when injected back into the patient's body. Now her family has been told by Seattle's Children's Hospital that the blood tests reveal the cancer has completely disappeared. So happy. Let's get a little bit more out of this. And it means on December 28th at Royal Manchester Children's Hospital, she will be well enough to have bone marrow transplant to make sure that leukemia can never return. Mrs. Cross says, we got a call from the hospital who told us that cancer cells have gone. We couldn't believe it, as she has never come back clear from any treatment before. She's running around now like any six-year-old. I'm so glad that I pushed for her to get on the trial at Seattle. If I hadn't, she wouldn't be here today. I knew that the T-cell therapy would be the only option with the chemotherapy not working. Mother's instinct has working hard at that point. We have never had a negative MRD bone marrow test before, so it's amazing to hear the words, no sign of leukemia. I just want to thank everyone from the bottom of our hearts. And let me stop with that. Let me stop with that and say about thanking and being grateful. I'm going to leave you with a video tonight, a video that my father and my brother did on Christmas Eve. They got together on Christmas Eve, and from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., they went through dozens of takes trying to sing a duet together, which was going to be their Christmas gift pretty much to each other, to have that time in the studio together. And my father, of course, is where all of our, you know, our performing arts and all of that, all of our appreciation for the arts comes from. And they sang O Holy Night, which is one of their favorite songs and happens to be one of my favorite songs too. And it's hilarious at first. It made me laugh until I cried. And then it almost made me cry just because of how beautiful it was at the end. And then I started thinking to myself as I'm sitting there kind of welling up with tears, what the fuck is wrong with me? Is there something wrong? Because this has been happening to me a lot lately. Am I becoming more and more emotionally unstable, or am I opening up a little bit more? Because I get these rushes, and it's not of just like, oh my God, I saw something and I'm triggered and I want to cry. But I get these rushes of gratitude, and it's been happening a lot more lately. These real rushes of just being grateful and being able to get this sense of gratitude for the people in my life, for the things that we're doing, for the good struggle that we're all a part of, for the sanctity of life, for the fragility of life, for how quickly it's over, but for what our capabilities and our potential as people are. I'm starting to become grateful for that. And I've become more and more grateful as 2016 rolled on. And as you know, everybody wants to say, fuck you, 2016. Look at this shit show. You know, look what it was, the worst year ever. Well, you know what? I didn't come out a richer man in the end of 2016. In fact, I gave up more financial comforts than I brought on in order to do the things that I love the most. Okay, but I will say that in the horror that some people think that 2016 was, I have found a way to become more and more grateful for things. And if I keep getting these rushes of gratitude, I'm happy for it, because I'm finding them in the little moments that I have in the living room every night when I go home with Lauren, with the little moments that we have on the air here, with everything that's going to happen in that other room when I get off the air and the band gets together and we practice. I hope that you guys at home, and girls, everybody, I hope you guys find gratitude in things. That's my wish for you in 2017. I think that it's possible for all of us, because like I said, I'm not a materially wealthier man at this point on December 28th. I have great hopes and great confidence for 2017, but what I've taken on this year is just as gratifying, if not more. And I hope that for all of you. So, hopefully I'm not going through menopause, as Gadget Doc said in the chat room. But what I do want to leave you with is this video. And once again, this is my father and Anthony, my father and my brother. And you'll see, I almost lost it when they referenced to me too. You'll hear it. You'll hear it. And it's going to, if you're listening right now, you're going to have just as good a time. But if you're watching right now, you're going to have an even better time. So check this out. I'm going to put this up on screen. I'm going to let it roll for it's 6.5 minutes long, and I think it's 6.5 minutes well worth it. Guys, see you tomorrow night for the last broadcast of the old year. Gadget Doc will be on. We're going to have a little bit of a reading. That's going to be fun. So check this out. Enjoy yourself, and talk to you soon. This is the Anthonys, my father and my brother.
Holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night. of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world.
It's.
I thought you were starting to laugh! It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Holy night, the stars are brightly shining. Oh, God, no. Frank would be screaming. This is terrible, terrible. The screams of what I was doing sounds like I was being scalded by a hot wax. Holy night. Oh, holy night. This is not right. I am so mad. Oh, holy night. Oh, holy night. The stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Rejoice! I have no idea. Let's hear. Pray to God.